The coronavirus pandemic has become a defining event of our time, fundamentally altering how we live, work, and relate to one another. In Apollo's Arrow, Nicholas Christakis, physician, sociologist, and Yale professor, draws on his unique interdisciplinary background to examine COVID-19 through multiple lenses. The book's title references Greek mythology, where Apollo could both heal and bring disease, firing plague-carrying arrows during the Trojan War. This ancient metaphor resonates powerfully today as we face our own pandemic, a threat both utterly new and deeply ancient. The book has garnered praise from figures ranging from Bill Gates to Atul Gawande, who called it gripping, enlightening, and vitally important. Beyond its scientific insights, the work has become a cultural touchstone for understanding how societies respond to catastrophic disease, with the New York Times noting it provides a comprehensive account of the COVID-19 crisis that helps readers understand both the science of SARS-CoV-2 and the historical context of pandemics. In late 2019, an invisible entity that had been evolving in bats for decades made a momentous leap to a human host in Wuhan, China. This chance event, whose precise details we may never fully know, triggered a cascade that would transform global society. Scientists believe this initial transmission likely occurred at the Wanan Seafood Wholesale Market, where 66% of the first 41 COVID-19 patients had direct connections. The market's crowded environment created ideal conditions for the virus to spread rapidly among humans. The first warning signs came when Dr. Jixiam Zhang reported 7 unusual pneumonia cases on December 26, 2019, with several patients connected to the Wanan market. Meanwhile, ophthalmologist Dr. Wenlang Li warned colleagues about SARS-like cases, only to be silenced by authorities and forced to sign a retraction. Li would later contract COVID-19 from a patient and die, becoming a symbol of both the disease's danger and the costs of suppressing information. By January 2020, Chinese authorities confirmed person-to-person transmission and the disease's severity, with 15% of early patients dying. The virus spread rapidly during the massive Lunar New Year migration, with nearly 12 million trips through Wuhan carrying the pathogen throughout China and beyond. After initially suppressing information, Chinese authorities abruptly changed course. On January 23, they announced a lockdown of Wuhan, quickly extending restrictions across Hubei province and eventually to nearly all of China, affecting 934 million people in the largest public health intervention in human history. These measures included strict home confinement, mandatory masks, temperature checks, and regular disinfection of public spaces. By late March, China's draconian measures had reduced new cases from thousands to fewer than 50 per day. While questions remained about China's reporting standards, the reduction represented an astonishing public health achievement, even if the virus wasn't eradicated, but merely temporarily contained. While China grappled with its outbreak, America remained largely oblivious to the looming threat. The first publicly known U.S. case was diagnosed in Washington State on January 21, a 35-year-old man who had returned from Wuhan. Despite exposing 60 people, remarkably, none became infected. The virus that truly took hold in Seattle came from a different source around February 13th, likely brought by someone from Hubei province. This variant devastated the Life Care Center nursing home in Kirkland, Washington, where by March 27, 167 cases emerged among residents, staff, and visitors, with at least 35 deaths. Nursing homes nationwide would become inadvertent pest houses with overwhelmed morgues. Evidence later showed the virus had arrived even earlier elsewhere. Patricia Dowd, who died February 8th in Santa Clara, California, likely contracted it in mid-January. America's catastrophic testing shortage meant only 59 cases were detected nationwide in the 6 weeks after patient zero, effectively blinding the country to the spreading pandemic. By March 25, Washington State confirmed 2,580 cases and 132 deaths, while nationwide numbers reached 68,673 cases and 1,028 deaths. The Diamond Princess cruise ship, quarantined in Yokohama on February 3, provided scientists with a crucial natural experiment. Among the confined population of 3,711 people, at least 712 contracted the virus, with 12 deaths. Scientists used this contained population to determine infection rates and mortality in ways they couldn't ethically test through designed experiments. Modern genetic techniques proved instrumental in tracking SARS-2 spread. Chinese scientists sequenced the virus's 29,903-letter genome by January 11, 2020. The sequencing revealed SARS-2 is 96.2% identical to a bat coronavirus from Yunnan, confirming its origin. By tracking tiny mutations that occur roughly every 2 weeks, scientists could trace the virus's global journey, revealing that domestic rather than international transmission posed the greatest risk to Americans despite travel restrictions. COVID-19 presents with remarkably varied symptoms and severity, making it uniquely challenging to diagnose and treat. In mild cases, patients may experience only sore throat, muscle aches, or low-grade fever, often mistaking it for flu or a cold. Some report loss of taste and smell as their only symptoms, while others develop skin rashes or COVID toes. Many describe profound fatigue, corona fog, as one 73-year-old called it, making simple tasks like climbing stairs or preparing meals exhausting. This unpredictability in presentation has made containment particularly difficult. Severe cases progress rapidly, sometimes within hours, with patients describing the sensation as an alien taking over your body or breathing like being stabbed in the chest with an ice pick. The virus specifically targets and kills cells lining the alveoli and lungs, causing fluid leakage that leads to drowning in one's own fluids. The immune system may overreact with a cytokine storm, triggering widespread inflammation that can damage multiple organs simultaneously. This hyperinflammatory response explains why some young, healthy individuals succumb while others with pre-existing conditions survive. Recovery trajectories vary dramatically, typically taking 2 to 6 weeks, with many experiencing lingering symptoms for months. These long haulers report persistent fatigue, brain fog, shortness of breath, and heart palpitations. Doctors now recognize post-COVID syndrome as potentially causing permanent organ damage, particularly to the heart, lungs, and brain. Studies have shown scarring in lung tissue, inflammation of the heart muscle, and neurological complications even in previously healthy individuals. The coronavirus pandemic demonstrates how infinitesimal things can have enormous effects, like the butterfly effect first proposed by meteorologist Edward Lorenz in 1972. A microscopic virus, roughly 100 nanometers in diameter, originating in China, upended the entire world's plans, from personal travel to business operations to political campaigns. This virgin soil epidemic found humanity completely susceptible, with no pre-existing immunity. Unlike seasonal flu strains, which encounter partially immune populations, COVID-19 exploited this immunological naivety to spread rapidly across continents. Scientists now believe the virus will likely become endemic, circulating among us indefinitely, requiring ongoing vigilance and adaptation of our medical and social responses. While pandemics may seem unprecedented to most living people, they have always been part of human history. As Albert Camus noted, plagues and wars take people equally by surprise, despite their recurring nature. Merrily Shapiro Asher's remarkable story bridges this gap in living memory. She survived both the 1918 Spanish flu as a 6-year-old and COVID-19 at age 107. While the 2020 coronavirus was novel, humans have long coexisted with other coronaviruses. 4 endemic types cause nothing more serious than the common cold. However, we've encountered more dangerous coronaviruses before. The 2003 SARS-1 outbreak began in China, originated in bats, caused similar symptoms, and spread internationally. yet crucial differences in its epidemiology prevented it from becoming catastrophic. SARS-1 was contained within just 8 months, infecting only 8,422 people worldwide. China delayed reporting that outbreak to the WHO until February 2003, 3 months after it began. The epidemic accelerated when fishmonger Zufeng Zhao infected 30 healthcare workers at Sun Yat-fen Memorial Hospital. One infected doctor, Jianlun Liu, traveled to Hong Kong and became a super spreader during his brief stay at the Metropole Hotel, infecting 23 other guests who subsequently seeded outbreaks worldwide. The key difference making SARS-1 easier to control was that it generally wasn't transmissible before symptoms appeared. Most infections occurred in healthcare settings when patients were already quite sick. SARS-2, however, can spread before symptoms develop, with studies showing 12 to 73% of transmissions occurring during this pre-symptomatic period. SARS-2's unique danger comes from its ability to bind to cells in both the upper airway and lungs, giving it the transmissibility of a common cold with potential lethality approaching SARS-1. This explains its wide symptom range and makes it particularly difficult to control. The effective reproduction number, RE, measures how many new cases each infected person generates. When this number exceeds 1, cases grow exponentially. Below 1, the epidemic declines. For SARS-1, the basic reproduction number, R0, was between 2.2 to 3.6, but RE could vary dramatically based on control measures. Singapore reduced it from 7 to below 1 in just 3 weeks through prompt quarantine procedures. While average reproduction numbers are useful, variation matters tremendously. Some infected individuals spread to no one, while superspreaders might infect dozens. This variation affects epidemic dynamics profoundly. Superspreading stems from biological factors, some people shed more virus, behavioral differences, socializing patterns, and network position, people with many social connections. Environment significantly influences superspreading. Indoor gatherings with forceful breathing or vocalization create ideal transmission conditions. A Washington choir practice infected 52 of 61 participants, with 2 deaths. Similar outbreaks occurred at funerals, business meetings, prisons, nursing homes, and factories. A study of 318 outbreaks in China found all but one occurred indoors. SARS-2 presents a unique threat compared to previous coronaviruses. With an R0 around 3.0, similar to SARS-1 but higher than seasonal flus 0.9 to 2.1, SARS-2 has smaller dispersion in RE, making transmission chains less likely to dead end. Though less deadly than SARS-1, under 1% CFR versus 10%, this paradoxically makes SARS-2 more dangerous as infected people survive longer to spread it. Comparing COVID-19 to past respiratory pandemics provides valuable context. The 1918 Spanish flu killed between 39 and 100 million people worldwide, about 2.1% of the global population. In the United States, it killed 550,000 people, 0.52% of the population, including 1 in every 100 men aged 25 to 34. The pandemic was so devastating, it temporarily reduced U.S. life expectancy by 10 years. When coronavirus gained footing in 2020, it encountered scientific and medical capabilities wholly different from prior pandemics. We can sequence viral genomes, deploy genetic tests, track population movement with mobile data, and utilize ICUs with computerized ventilators. Yet despite these advances, our primary defenses against COVID-19 resembled primitive epidemiological tools from centuries past, gathering bans and face masks. There are 2 broad pandemic response approaches: pharmaceutical interventions, medications and vaccines, and non-pharmaceutical interventions, NPIs. While modern medicine has improved our position compared to our ancestors, its role in reducing infectious disease mortality has historically been smaller than commonly believed. flattening the curve produced significant benefits beyond preventing hospital overload. It bought time to save lives by ensuring ventilators and medications remained available, preventing healthcare worker exhaustion and infection, allowing the public health system to develop testing and contact tracing, pushing infections into the future when better treatments might exist, and potentially allowing time for the virus to mutate into less dangerous forms. The shutdown likely prevented 60 million cases and over 300,000 deaths during the first wave, though these interventions came with significant medical, social, and economic costs. By May 2020, 33 million Americans had lost jobs, erasing a decade of employment gains, with 43% of adults reporting job loss or pay cuts in their households, disproportionately affecting lower-income and minority communities. Implementing NPIs required difficult trade-offs that became highly politicized. Effective implementation requires public trust through honest communication about rationales, trade-offs, and uncertainties. A fundamental challenge in epidemic response is explaining exponential growth to the public. The concept that for a long time nothing seems to be happening, then suddenly everything happens at once, making early action critical despite appearing unnecessary. The pandemic's devastating impact extended beyond physical health, profoundly disrupting human connection during life's most sacred moments. As Henri Poincaré observed long ago, the plague was nothing. Fear of the plague was much more formidable. The pandemic transformed death and mourning into isolated experiences. In ultra-Orthodox Jewish communities, where shared rituals form daily life, rabbis created hotlines to play ancient prayers for the dying over speakerphones placed beside isolated ICU patients. The prohibition of family visits during death struck many as not just inhumane, but immoral. Studies show 81% of patients and 95% of families believe presence at death is vital, yet COVID-19 forced countless people to die alone. Serious pandemics always spawn parallel epidemics of grief, anger, fear, denial, and despair. By April 2020, surveys revealed significant emotional distress compared to 2019. Enjoyment dropped 64% versus 83%, while worry 52% versus 35%, sadness 32% versus 23%, and anger 24% versus 15% all increased. Clinical studies showed severe psychological distress rose from 3.9% in 2018 to 13.6% in April 2020. Fear itself becomes contagious during epidemics, spreading more efficiently than pathogens. People contract diseases only through infected individuals, but fear spreads through contact with either infected or merely fearful people. We respond by seeking control, often by blaming others, typically minorities or outsiders. Truth becomes another casualty of plague, with denial and lies accompanying deadly epidemics throughout history. The COVID-19 pandemic revealed widespread censorship at multiple levels, from hospital administrators silencing doctors to the highest levels of government. This denial reflects a widening fissure between science and politics, though unlike climate change, pandemic consequences unfold rapidly, making reality impossible to ignore. Misinformation flourished during the COVID-19 pandemic, with conspiracy theories mutating like pathogens to fit their environment. Analysis of Twitter data revealed misinformation sharing nearly matched credible sources like the CDC. A study of 200 million pandemic-related tweets found 62% of top retweeters were bots, with orchestrated campaigns possibly backed by Russian or Chinese governments. Throughout history, plagues have triggered the human impulse to blame others, particularly outsiders and minorities. During the COVID-19 pandemic, anti-Asian discrimination flourished, with some framing the virus as an attack worse than Pearl Harbor or 9/11. The fundamental error in all these cases is blaming humans rather than the mindless pathogen itself. While some optimistically suggest that pandemics might decrease divisions by highlighting our shared vulnerability, the reality is that epidemics typically heighten inequality. Though some economists speculated COVID-19 might reduce economic inequality by diminishing wealth at the top or prompting progressive taxation, pandemics historically amplify existing social divisions. SARS-2 displays an unusual backward L-shaped mortality curve, with dramatically higher risk for older people but relatively low risk for the young. Children appear largely spared by COVID-19, possibly due to differences in ACE2 receptors, immune system responses, or prior exposure to other viruses. From the earliest COVID-19 reports from Wuhan, men have consistently shown higher infection rates, symptom severity, and mortality than women, suffering approximately 50% more deaths overall. While initially attributed to higher smoking rates among Chinese men, subsequent analyses revealed that men's generally poorer health status and biological differences in immune response account for much of this disparity. The pandemic has starkly revealed existing structural inequalities. While wealthier individuals could work remotely from safer locations, low-income workers in essential jobs faced higher exposure risks. Many such positions lack adequate health insurance or sick leave, forcing people to continue working while ill. Ethnic and racial disparities in coronavirus infection and death rates quickly became evident. CDC data through May 2020 showed Hispanics and African Americans were roughly 3 times more likely to become infected and twice as likely to die compared to whites. After age adjustment, blacks had 3.8 times higher risk of dying than whites nationally, with state-specific disparities ranging from 2.1 times, Massachusetts, to 8.1 times, Kansas. As the pandemic intensified in March 2020, mutual aid organizations rapidly emerged nationwide. These groups, with roots going back more than a century, saw a significant resurgence based on principles of solidarity, not charity, emphasizing collective care rather than top-down assistance. Networks like COVID-19 Mutual Aid USA compiled comprehensive resources connecting those needing help with those offering it across every state and town. Generosity during an epidemic is uniquely remarkable because the act itself poses health risks. Delivering groceries to a housebound neighbor during a pandemic demonstrates a willingness to prioritize others' needs above personal safety. This selflessness is exemplified by healthcare workers, but extends to ordinary citizens as well. Love and connection make suffering more bearable during crises. Research shows that pain is tolerated better when a spouse is present, and sometimes just thinking about a partner provides stress relief. During disasters, relationships often intensify, either strengthening or breaking apart. When mortality becomes more salient, people naturally draw closer to loved ones. Despite physical separation, our species demonstrated remarkable capacities for connection and cooperation during the pandemic. Orchestra musicians isolated in their homes recorded individual performances that were edited together into moving symphonies. A crucial realization about physical distancing was that people weren't staying home primarily to protect themselves, but to protect others. Healthcare workers demonstrated extraordinary altruism by assuming personal risk, continuing a tradition documented since Thucydides observed physicians dying most thickly during the plague of Athens in 430 BCE. By June 2020, nearly 600 American healthcare workers had died from COVID-19, with thousands more worldwide. As lockdowns took effect in March 2020, seismologist Thomas Lecoq noticed an extraordinary stillness in the Earth itself. The anthropogenic vibrations that normally rattle our planet had ceased, allowing scientists to detect natural phenomena like distant river flows. Wildlife ventured into empty cities, pollution disappeared, and in India, Himalayan peaks became visible from over 120 miles away for the first time in generations. The pandemic's trajectory will unfold across 3 periods: the immediate pandemic period through 2022, with masks and social distancing, The intermediate pandemic period through 2024 of recovery from clinical, psychological, social, and economic shock, and finally, the post-pandemic period beginning around 2024, when normal life resumes with persistent changes. The pandemic fostered greater self-reliance across many domains, from home cooking and haircuts to medical care decisions. Children perhaps benefited most from increased independence, with many parents relaxing supervision. Despite irregular schedules, children thrived with more meaningful family time and unsupervised play. Americans have surprisingly poor hygiene habits, despite knowing better. Surveys reveal a gap between stated and actual hand-washing practices, with men being particularly lax. The ancient custom of handshaking, depicted as far back as 9th century BCE Assyria, disappeared overnight during the pandemic. The pandemic created paradoxical privacy situations, increased family intimacy, but decreased privacy in other contexts. Remote learning forced over 1 million students to submit to invasive proctoring, with strangers monitoring their every move during exams. On a larger scale, governments worldwide deployed surveillance technologies for contact tracing, using phone data, facial recognition, and financial records to track potential exposure. COVID-19 dramatically accelerated healthcare changes that might otherwise have taken years. The pandemic revealed how many medical interventions may be unnecessary or even harmful. Studies suggest we've been over-treating minor issues like mammographic irregularities and mild heart attacks, subjecting patients to risky procedures driven more by financial incentives than patient needs. The pandemic triggered massive economic shifts that will outlast the immediate crisis. As remote work becomes normalized, employers need less office space, affecting custodial staff, building managers, and rental agents. Urban dwellers, after experiencing lockdown in small apartments, may seek housing in less dense areas, reshaping real estate markets. The mid-20th century saw widespread optimism about disease eradication, with advances in antibiotics, vaccines, and sanitation leading experts to predict the disappearance of major infections. The successful eradication of smallpox in 1980 reinforced this confidence. However, this optimism proved misguided. Microbes have evolutionary advantages. They're numerous, reproduce rapidly, and mutate easily. COVID-19 has measurably reduced life expectancy. While individual risk of death remains relatively low, less than 1% for those under 70-80 who contract it, the population-level impact is substantial. Demographic analyses from Sweden suggest SARS-2 could reduce life expectancy by 3 years for men and 2 for women. Pandemics end in several ways. Non-pharmaceutical interventions can temporarily drive cases to zero, but this creates a false bottom as the pathogen remains in circulation. More permanently, herd immunity, whether through natural infection or vaccination, makes it difficult for the pathogen to reestablish itself. For SARS-2, this requires 40 to 67% population immunity, which should occur naturally or through vaccination by around 2022. After a century among humans, OC43 has evolved into a mild pathogen causing common colds. This pattern suggests a possible future for SARS-2. Once we achieve herd immunity, people might be exposed as children, develop mild disease and immunity, then avoid serious illness upon re-exposure later in life. Pandemics are not just biological phenomena, but sociological ones driven by human beliefs and actions. While biological endings come through herd immunity, viral evolution toward less lethality, or human genetic resistance, pandemics also have social endings when fear, anxiety, and disruptions either decline or become accepted as ordinary facts of life. Despite warnings from experts about pandemic threats, Americans were caught emotionally, politically, and practically unprepared for COVID-19. We lacked necessary equipment and a collective understanding of the threat. The pandemic has awakened Americans to public health's importance, similar to how 9/11 revealed national security vulnerabilities. Like Prometheus giving humans blind hopefulness in Greek mythology, hope motivates us to prepare. Microbes have shaped our evolution since our species' origin, but we've outlived plagues before using biological and social tools. Life will return to normal. Plagues always end, and like plagues, hope remains an enduring part of the human condition.